life better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one.
In the Garden is brought to you by The Flower Farm, believing in the power of community-supported agriculture with locally grown cut flower bouquets in every color for any occasion. Open every day except Wednesday, 10 to 5, 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing.
Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure.
Well, welcome everyone. Welcome to In the Garden, KFSK's Garden Show with our Master Gardener.
In the good news end of things, it's actually been a wonderful day today. But in the other good news, we actually have a tomato that is starting to turn color in the greenhouse. So there is hope.
Good for you. I know you're in such a good mood today because you've caught some halibut. You caught your limit.
We caught halibut. made last night, we picked raspberries. And this morning caught a wily porcupine. And so, I mean, it's been just a great 24 hours.
Isn't it amazing what a little sunshine can do for us?
Yep, the sunshine is good. And, yeah, we got lots to talk about.
Well,
so,
before
you know,
we
recipes
get...
and
oh, good.
All sorts of good stuff.
Well, before we get started, we do have a caller who's called with a question. So if it's all right with you, we'd like to take that call.
Well, of course.
All right, great. Hi, caller.
Yeah,
welcome.
Hello. I was wondering if Ed could help with how to get rid of ferns, if there's anything you can put on them, and also if they're airborne, if the roots spread through the, or when the ferns spread and how they spread.
Ah, okay. Well, as far as you're going to get rid of ferns, just dig them up and ship them to me, and I will sell them to someone else for my native plant revegetation project. That's the best way. You sell your weeds, sell your pests.
Okay.
Okay, other than that, digging them up is a chore. You know, you're talking about the wild sword ferns, I assume, the big, they're ostrich ferns.
Yeah, we've
been
using
them. They are big, they are tough.
Yes.
An excavator is a good thing to use, but you may not be able to get that into your backyard.
Yes.
But it takes, some serious, a really well-sharpened mattock or pick mattock.
Yeah.
To chop them apart, to dig them out. Teenagers are probably looking for work in your neighborhood, I'll bet. something worthwhile, put them to work. So dig them out, and normally they don't sprout back from, if you chop out the crown, but again, they leave this really solid, it's the equivalent of roots. They don't exactly have roots that are left behind. So, you know, if you want to plant something else there, you pretty much do have to get the whole chunk out of there. The way they normally spread, they don't... I guess it depends on which kind of fern you're talking about, too. I mean, the big clumping ferns, like I said, the ostrich or sword ferns,
yes,
are a pretty solid mass.
Yes.
There's the little creeping oak fern, it's called. It only gets about 8 inches tall. But that one runs underground.
Okay.
And that one pops up all over in ornamental beds. I mean, it looks rather attractive, but except, of course, if it's in a place you don't want it. As far as how the normal way ferns multiply, they do have spores, and it's kind of a complicated thing, but it's almost the equivalent of seeds for ferns. And the spores, you'll see if you turn over a fern leaf, you'll see the little kind of almost like pockets. If you use a magnifying glass, it literally they're like little capsules kind of underneath that they are released. You can make spore prints. In fact, if you took a fern leaf, set it on a piece of white paper, the spores will drop off onto the paper, kind of like you do with mushroom spore prints.
Yes.
So you can see them come out. And essentially, luckily, not all of them germinate, or we'd be covered with ferns, because there are, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of them on each fern leaf.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they'd have to drop onto the right substrate with a certain amount of moisture and all of that, damp. We've got to stay moist all the time. And, of course, Southeast Alaska is a really good place for growing ferns.
Yes.
Do you have a lot of ferns to dig up?
You can. Ferns are damaged. Yeah, usually damaged. I guess that's the best way to put it. If you use how you feel about herbicides, but Roundup will pretty much kill ferns.
Okay.
Straight up. If you don't mind using Roundup.
What time of year do they spread?
This would be the time to be spraying them because, and that applies really to other weeds too, including things like horsetail, which is another tough one to kill. But this time of year, the plants are taking the nutrients from the leaves and storing them in the roots.
Okay.
So that's the time to spray something like this on them and is more likely to kill them as opposed to in the springtime when the new growth is coming up, the nutrients are coming up from the roots into the new growth.
Okay.
So in any case, I mean, you're still... Assuming that you want to remove them, you still have the work of removing the hopefully dead and dying parts later on, if that's your goal, to get that out and plant something else in that area.
Yeah, they're just spreading like weeds around certain areas.
Do you have a lot of clumps?
They do. Yeah, they do. And again, like I said, it kind of depends on varieties, but some do spread faster than others. Some are much more tenacious than others. And we have, I'm not sure how many species of ferns in southeast Alaska, but at least a dozen or so, and I'm going to be planting half a dozen of them at a project here in the next month.
Yes.
So I have been digging up ferns from various and sundry, well, including my own gardens, where they spread quite well.
Yes.
And so.
Okay, well, thank you, Ed.
Okay, you're welcome. Good luck with your fern removal.
Thanks for calling. Well, I wonder how many he had. I asked a couple times, but I don't think he heard me. If he's digging them up, I hope he doesn't have a whole lot.
I mean, for me, like I said, I see ferns in many, it's more and more. They are a resource for me. I mean, it's like picking up $10 and $20 bills, but there's some work involved in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, here we have the demand. And again, in Petersburg, maybe not so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But as for raspberries, everybody needs raspberries, right? I don't know anybody. I really don't know anybody who doesn't like raspberries.
Oh, I think we all love them.
So it's great that we are finally starting. We're easily three weeks late in the raspberry harvest. This last bit of dry weather has certainly helped. Like I said, we were picking last night. My wife had picked some a few days earlier, near the first batch of them starting to ripen. And it's tough. Even already, there are, with the damp weather we've had, there's already moldy berries.
Mm-hmm.
So they do get moldy quickly. So when these things are ripening in decent weather, we need to be picking them just about every other day, or every third day at the most. And if we can, pull off the moldy ones and get rid of them if at all possible as we go. So then, because otherwise they can certainly easily infect other berries that are nearby them.
Right, right. And are you...
And then, of course, while we were out there last night picking the berries, we were also helping the new shoots, which will give us berries next year. I did manage to run some wires, support wires, for my trellis about a month and a half ago. So we were trying to encourage the new shoots to be inside of the wires, so then they will be supported for next year. And looking at the same time, kind of looking at the patch and thinking about that, and eventually when we're pruning, pruning out the dead growth, which will either happen this fall or first thing in the springtime, I'll also thin out some of the smallest, if there's some new growth which is, half the size, some of them where the big ones are 5 to 6 feet tall already, but there's other ones that are only going to be 2 feet tall. So it's worth pruning out some of that small stuff, partly to get more air circulation, ideally early in the spring before the sap is rising, the nutrients are going up. So then more of the nutrients are going to those bigger stems, which will hold their berries up higher, away from the slugs and stuff. And usually the smaller stems have smaller berries, and they tend to be shaded out underneath too. So again, they are more likely to get moldy. They're more likely to be missed by us when picking, unless you have little kids who are helping you pick the berries, and you know they're a little lower to the ground, so that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's kind of the part of the management of the raspberry patch, is doing the right pruning at the right time of the right parts. Be careful about not pruning the wrong parts, the wrong ones out. I just talked to somebody recently who did just that, and so they don't have any raspberries this year because they pruned, anyway, they pruned the wrong parts.
Right. We had someone do that here
and
in
then,
town, too.
And this fall, bring in some seaweed. Put seaweed around the raspberries, which is terrific fertilizer for them.
Okay. We will be
and
doing that.
The ongoing battle is also, of course, keeping porcupines out of the raspberry patch. And we won a battle this morning I noticed day before yesterday one had gotten in. I have seine webbing and some lightweight fencing, steel fencing around it, mesh fencing, that I don't have attached to the posts at the top, so it's quite floppy. They can't climb the stuff. But porcupine managed to worm his way in between two. There's one corner where there were kind of two layers of the netting, and he snuck in between and got inside and started chewing, knocked down some of the nice stem, the new growth. Of course, that's the tasty stuff for them. And so I did, and I don't know, this may not be politically correct, blah, 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 but I did set leg hole traps in there.
Uh-huh.
And I was most pleased to catch them this morning. So I am planning to take him down to the beach and let the eagles and the ravens enjoy him a little later this afternoon once I get off the phone.
Well, sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, the recipes, I mean, we've eaten porcupines. And this time of year, they're not, you know, they're fairly mild flavored because they've been eating green stuff and all of that. But there's very little meat on a porcupine once you get them undressed. And it takes some, you know, a lot of garlic and special marinades to make them particularly tasty. So I'll share them with the wildlife.
Well, all right. So what else has been eating your raspberries? Anything else been getting in there?
Luckily, well, we don't have a deer or a bear problem usually getting into our raspberries. Deer definitely like raspberry plants, especially the new growth. I'm sure if you haven't noticed, you probably heard about it in Petersburg. And that's definitely worth keeping them out. Again, if the low, sometimes you'll get a few slugs on the low branches, particularly if a heavily laden branch bends down to the ground with ripe strawberries on it. I mean, ripe raspberries on it. You know, they definitely like those raspberries.
Yeah.
So that's another good reason to keep them well supported. Good air circulation and all that too is really important. And now that I'm walking in ours, I'm almost to the point of look, you know, as I look at these and I see them and where our rows, I've got wide rows, and even the space in between, the paths in between is hardly wide enough. You know, we can just barely walk down the middle of them.
Uh-huh.
So again, I may have to do some extra thinning so I get that extra air circulation in there. And again, the light, you know, the more sun, the more light we can get onto our berries and fruits, usually the better color and the better flavor and more sugar we will have on them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this year we haven't had that much sun, but still, we did make we made freezer jam this morning and before we went out fishing, and it took minutes. I mean, it is so easy to do that, to make freezer jam compared to cooked jam. Of course, with the cooked jam that you seal in the jars, those at least you can give away or mail off to far-off places, friends who left Alaska, as you know, send them gifts.
Some of your raspberries.
Yeah, where the cooked jam or the freezer jam obviously needs to be in a freezer and or moved quickly, but it does have so much better flavor. You know, it tastes just about like fresh raspberries.
Mm. Can you give us a recipe?
Pardon?
Do you have a quick recipe you want to give us for your freezer jam?
The basic recipe is that normally if you buy any of the commercial pectin,
mm-hmm.
to help make a gel,
mm-hmm.
It is very quick. I mean, you crush the berries, you measure your sugar, mix in your pectin, and at least the variety that we use, SureGel. You add water, add a cup of water to the sugar and the SureGel, boil it for a minute, pour it onto the berries in the bowl, stir it for a minute into the jars, and you have jam.
Well, that is quick.
It is literally a 15-minute process.
Yeah, so you're not cooking your berries at all. You just put the hot liquid right on the berries.
Correct. That is exactly right. And then they say to let it set overnight out, not frozen, because it helps the gelling process, and then into the freezer.
All right.
So it is, like I said, it takes longer to pick the berries than it does to make the jam.
Yeah. Have you been picking any blueberries?
And the flavor is outstanding.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. It just explodes.
Yeah. And, of course, you can use, you can use recycled containers of various sorts. I mean, we've got some little plastic freezer containers, but we can use small peanut butter jars. Again, since you're freezing it, you're not worried about lids or other, as long as they're kind of paper jars with the sugar in them, they don't normally, even glass jars you can use in the freezer. But again, plastic ones that if you're good at saving, that sort of thing, work great.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. I want to give it a try. I've got friends who have a patch. Maybe I can get some of theirs. But I was at a friend's house.
Offer, swap them something good, or
yes,
offer to help weed their yard or clean up their raspberry patch for them, or whatever it takes to make that trade possible.
Well, I was at a friend's house last night, and she had done some blueberry picking. She spent like a couple hours picking blueberries and only came up with about, I had to laugh a little bit, about 50 blueberries. It wasn't very many. Are you getting some blueberries where you're at? And maybe she was just in the wrong spot, too. I haven't been out yet.
Yeah,
we're going to go this weekend.
Yeah, we've got lots of blueberries here. It's a great year for blueberries and huckleberries. A couple weeks back, made a nice pie when my sister from Minnesota was here. And we've had blueberry pancakes multiple times. So we do need to pick some to freeze some so we have them for the winter for more pancakes and other stuff. But it's a very good year for berries around here, at least.
Okay.
And much better. Last year was terrible. So this year is quite good, and we're enjoying berries.
Okay. Well, we're going to go out this weekend and look. So she was just at the wrong spot, probably.
Could well be, whether the birds or the bears or other pickers beat her to the spot. I know we're seeing, even along the highway, people are pulling over and out to see them picking in the bushes. So there's quite a lot around, and the flavor is improving, again, now that we're getting some drier weather. So it'd be nice. I think it's supposed to get rain tomorrow and then back to a kind of drier condition. So the garden is doing reasonably well. Something in the greenhouse, too, folks should be taking a look at. We talked about getting moldy berries, but in the greenhouses right now, starting to have some problems with mold, gray mold, on leaves of some of the tomatoes. And I've got zucchinis in there, and the zucchinis are blooming beautifully. We're eating zucchinis now. Grilled some last night. Those blossoms, as soon as they blossom, folks should be going through their greenhouse and try to gently snap off the blossoms off the end of the zucchinis, because the mold starts on those and then it just grows right down into the end of the zucchinis. So that's a really important thing to remove. And any of the old flowers, including the male flowers, remove any of that so that it isn't a reservoir for more mold to grow. It grows easily enough anyway. So just try to keep working at cleaning that stuff out of the greenhouse.
Okay. And keeping the air circulating.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, on the days that we're getting a little bit warmer days, I'm leaving the doors open. I've got my vents propped open. Just the vents are open all the time. Got to get some air circulation in there.
Yeah.
And if you've got a chance to put in an oscillating fan to move the air across the bushes, plants, whatever you've got in there, would be great.
Okay. Well, we're getting a greenhouse built from the school. The school's going to build one here in the fall. We've been planning to build one for a few months now and finally have all the supplies, and school gets back in and the big greenhouse is going to be built. So the school is very excited about being able to grow some tomatoes and cucumbers right inside.
Good deal.
Yeah.
And are they able to use waste heat, or I don't know what, if you're going to do any heating or extra lighting to prolong the season?
They're putting in some electricity for that, and it hasn't been decided what type yet, but what type of heat and what type of lighting, but there'll be, you know, the box there and all the electrical outlets and all of that. So that's good.
Good, yeah. Well, and again, like you say, the critical thing is having electricity available for fans and vents to start with, and to do as much of that as you can. And then work on, you know, cleanliness.
Mm-hmm.
That is important, the stuff that you bring into the greenhouse and, you know, what gets taken out of the greenhouse. Because certainly you can have a problem with disease buildup and fungus buildup in the greenhouse. And even, well, insects, too, can become a problem, aphids and other assorted critters.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to let us know about that was on your list today?
Oh, that's, I mean, it's been such a great day that that kind of covers it. I'm just going to clean up some of our halibut here, and we're going to make some fresh ceviche. I mean, I've got fresh cilantro waiting in the greenhouse and fresh garlic that's curing. So I had to buy tomatoes and avocados and a jalapeno pepper, however.
Well, that's okay.
And the lemons and limes. Not growing those yet, but anyway, someday maybe.
Yes, and maybe you'll be having fresh halibut for dinner as well, besides the ceviche.
Oh, that's guaranteed. Yes, definitely.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in today and being a part of the show, Ed. We really appreciate it. And thank you to the caller that called in about the ferns. If you missed any part of this show, you can get on KFSK.org and listen to it. It'll be up on the internet probably within an hour or two, probably two. And we'll be talking to you next week.
All right. Very good.
I hope you can get out fishing again, Ed.
That'd be nice.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, there we have it. That's In the Garden for today, this Thursday, the 16th of August. Thanks, Ed Byarski, for talking to us every week.